My name is Kimberly Cox from Hellendale, and I am the chair. The board is conducting this meeting using teleconference equipment, permitting board members and the public to participate from Truckee, Rosamond, South Lake Tahoe, and Apple Valley. Board members participating from South Lake Tahoe is Don Jardine. Board member participating from Truckee is Eric Sandell. Board member participating from Rosamond is Keith Diaz.
Hello.
Members participating from Apple Valley are myself and Peter Pumphrey. Was there someone that had something to say on the phone?
Just saying hello.
Hello, we're glad to have you. Dr. Amy Horn is not able to be with us today, but I understand she may drop in and listen as her time allows her to. The executive officer is Patty Kumyanjan. Ms. Kumyanjan, would you please introduce the staff participating on the call from this location and from South Lake Tahoe?
Thank you, Chairperson Cox. Those that are attending here in the Apple Valley location are Cindy Mitten from our Victorville office, Patrice Copeland, also from our Victorville office, Mike Plasiak, our division manager from Victorville, Rich Booth from our Tahoe office, Bill Muir from Victorville, Omar Pacheco, and to my left are Sue Genera, who is the board clerk, and Kim Niemeyer from the State Water Board, our board legal counsel. I'm going to now turn it over to the Tahoe office since I can't see who's there. And if the staff could please kindly introduce themselves who are in the room.
Hello, Patty. This is Lori Kemper. And it's really important that you guys speak loudly because we're hearing you, but it could be a little louder. And so I'm here in South Lake Tahoe with Don Jardine. Do you want to say hello?
Hi.
And he's from Alpine County. And then we have Doug Smith, our division manager. We also have two members of the public here in South Lake Tahoe. And you can go on to the next.
Are there any? Moving on, the regional board will be considering many items during this meeting. Although we must use our time wisely, we encourage your input on any items so that our decision will be based on all available information. Because this meeting is being conducted as a teleconference, a roll call vote will be used for all items requiring an action by the board. If you wish to speak on any agenda item, please wait until comments from the public have been requested. I will call upon members of the public to speak by location. This may get a little complicated, so bear with me. In the interest of everyone's time, please communicate your ideas clearly and efficiently. So that we can develop an accurate administrative record, we ask that you speak only after you are recognized. At that time, please come to the telephone or the podium if you are here in person. State and spell your first and last name and your affiliation before speaking to the agenda item. If you do not follow these rules or become repetitious, you may be asked to end your presentation. Although we do not administer an oath in most proceedings before this board, we expect all statements made before this board to be truthful with no attempts to mislead by false statements, deceptive presentation, or failure to include essential information. We also ask that you obey our ground rules, which are treat everyone with respect. This includes board members, board staff, and anyone who testifies and your fellow citizens. This means no personal attacks, no violent, contemptuous, or disruptive behavior. Any person aggrieved by an action or inaction of the regional board, including but not limited to the issuance, modification, or rejection of waste discharge requirements, administrative civil liability, or a cease and desist order, may petition the State Water Resources Control Board to review the decision. The State Board must receive the petition within 30 days of the Regional Board's meeting at which the action was taken. Board staff will provide you with copies of the regulations about filing petitions if you request them. They are also available on the State Water Resources Control Board website. So our first item of business is the public forum. Is there anyone in a Truckee location who would like to address the board during public forum?
I have the whole room to myself, so the answer is no.
Okay, very good. Is there anyone in the Rosamond meeting location who wishes to address the board at this time?
No, there is not.
Okay. Is there anyone in South Lake Tahoe location who wishes to address the board under this public forum?
No, there is not.
Okay. And is there anyone here in Apple Valley who would like to address the board at this time? Okay. Seeing none, we will move on to item number two, which is the adoption of the January 2015 minutes.
Don Jardine, go ahead. He moved the minutes, but I had it on mute. Sorry. He moved adoption of the minutes.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Madam Clerk, will you do a roll call?
Keith Dias?
I will abstain because I was not present at that meeting.
Okay. And Don Jardine, you made the motion. Peter Pumphrey seconded it. Eric Sandell?
Aye.
And Kimberly Cox?
Aye.
It carries.
We will move on to item number three, adoption of the uncontested calendar.
Madam Chairman, this is Pete Pumphrey. There are revisions, I believe, to item six and to item seven. And with those revisions, I would move adoption of the calendar. Seven is not part of the uncontested items. I stand corrected.
So we have a motion by Mr. Pumphrey. Is there a second?
There's a second by Don Jardine.
Okay.
All right. Keith Dias?
Aye.
Don and Peter. And Eric Sandell?
Aye.
And Kimberly Cox?
Aye.
Carries.
We will now move on to item seven. This is a public hearing, consideration of the issuance of a cease and desist order. Am I in the right one?
Oh, I apologize. Maybe I didn't.
Oh, sorry. Let me get to the right. Those are the minutes. Let's see. So many pieces of paper here I'm trying to juggle. Item seven, proposed amendment of the water quality control plan for the Lahontan region. Ms. Kumyunjin.
I'd like to invite...
You need to turn your mic
there
on.
There we go. I'd like to invite Rich Booth to provide the staff presentation on this item.
Thank you, Ms. Kumyunjin. Good afternoon, Chairperson Cox, other members of the board, and other attendees. My name is Rich Booth. I am the chief of the TMDL Basin Planning Unit in the South Lake Tahoe office, and I am trained as a hydrogeologist. Now, for those of you on the phone, I'm speaking from the Apple Valley location, and present with me are members of the Victorville staff, as well as Navy personnel, in case you have any questions on this item. Now, I'm going to speak from the material in your agenda package. We are not presenting a PowerPoint presentation. Instead, we're speaking specifically from your agenda package. And my presentation today starts on Bates Stamp Page 7-47. And I want to point out that the last two pages of this item are simply a larger, readable version of my last two slides. They're 11x17 size maps that I'll be speaking from. (Clears throat) You may find the last figure, figure three, particularly helpful as we go through the presentation. Now, I'm here today to seek your approval for removing the drinking water beneficial use, known as the MUN beneficial use, for certain groundwaters beneath the Naval Air Weapons Station, China Lake, which is near Ridgecrest. And let's see, on page 7-47, I believe we have a figure that shows the location. Kind of hard to read there, but the area that we're talking about is near Ridgecrest. Okay. And another little summary of this item is that the groundwater being considered for de-designation is high in salts and arsenic. It is not suitable for drinking. The de-designation will likely result in the Navy proposing reduced groundwater remediation of substances released by the Navy in the past. And I want to point out early in this presentation that the local water district is in support of the de-designation because the area of de-designation is limited and will not impact water supply source areas. I will now speak from slide 3, which is on page 7-48. As I mentioned, certain groundwaters beneath China Lake are naturally high in TDS, arsenic, and other inorganic constituents. And when I refer to China Lake, I typically mean the facility. If I want to refer to China Lake, the Playa Lake, I will so designate. The municipal beneficial use will facilitate the Navy's groundwater remediation program, that is to say, not require cleanup to drinking water standards where the water is not naturally drinkable. Slide 4, same page. We have received no comments in opposition to this, including back in May of 2013 when we first started the CEQA scoping for this item. We have received comments in favor of the de-designation, specifically from Indian Wells Valley Cooperative Groundwater Group, as well as Indian Wells Valley Water District. We've also received support from our sister agency, the Department of Toxic Substance Control. Slide 5 on page 7-49. The State Board has a drinking water policy known as Resolution 8863, which has three parts. If total dissolved solids exceed 3,000 milligrams per liter, or contamination by natural processes cannot reasonably be treated, or the water source does not supply sufficient water supply, capable of a sustained yield of 200 gallons per day, that water would be considered to be not drinkable. On slide 6 of the same page, I'm going to mention that the total dissolved solids do in fact exceed 3,000 milligrams per liter in the areas that we're considering for de-designation. I'll mention the areas briefly now, but I will spend some more time later in my talk outlining very specifically where the areas are that we're talking about. Now, if you go to the Indian Wells Valley, and you can see that if you want to skip up to figure 2 of your 11 by 17 document, Western Indian Wells Valley is in the western portion of that figure and extends off the figure, and that water is pretty fresh. The TDS ranges in that area from 186 to 2,810 milligram per liter. But if you go into the eastern Indian Wells Valley, particularly in the shallow groundwater zone, because there's more than one groundwater zone, this is where we find the naturally high TDS numbers ranging up to 56,000 milligram per liter. And by the way, all these data, all this information we have about the subsurface was gathered by the Navy and their contractors because of the Navy's investigation and groundwater remediation of their past uses and putting contamination into some of the groundwater. Now, Salt Wells groundwater has similar ranges of high TDS and other inorganics. And this water that we're speaking of to be de-designated has, to our knowledge, never been used for drinking. Slide 7, page 750, 7-50. Arsenic is one of the other constituents, inorganic constituents, that is naturally high due to the geology of the area. And that is another reason why we're recommending de-designation. And as I'll speak to later, treatment of the water is really not economically feasible. And the high arsenic is one of the reasons. Slide 8, page 7-50. One of the features of this State Board Resolution 8863 has to do with water supply. And we found that in the shallow zone of the Eastern Wells Valley, that the saturated thickness of the water-bearing zone is very thin. It's not very thick, and it really does not sustain 200 gallons per day. So for various of these three reasons, we feel that the waters that I will designate here or outline here really don't meet the 8863 criteria. Slide 9 on page 7-51. I'm going to speak a little bit as to the areas I'm referring to here, and then I'll expand in more detail on the figures. But the area we're recommending for de-designation includes the entire Salt Wells Valley groundwater basin, and it includes the Eastern Wells Indian Valley, and only the shallow zone of that groundwater basin. And again, these information we have in the subsurface came from Navy's and their consultants' hydrologic characterization studies, several over the past several years, all of which have undergone Water Board staff review. And the last slide I have here before I go to the figures is to point out that it is only the municipal, the domestic water supply beneficial use we are recommending for de-designation. The remaining beneficial use for Salt Wells Valley is industrial supply, and the remaining beneficial use of Indian Wells Valley is industrial supply, freshwater replenishment, and agricultural supply. If you adopt this resolution today, as we are recommending, then the de-designation information will go to State Board for their approval, and then it will go to Office of Administrative Law for their approval. The US EPA does not review this because this deals with groundwater, and the US EPA doesn't have the jurisdiction over this type of basin plan amendment for groundwater. I'll be glad to pause right now before I launch into the figures to see if there's any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Booth. Mr. Jardine, do you have any questions for staff at this point?
No questions.
Mr. Sandell?
No questions, but thank you very much for the 11 by 17 maps.
You're very welcome. We think those are better than a PowerPoint any day.
Oh, no, they're great.
And I want to thank the Navy and their consultants for providing those.
Mr. Dias, do you have any questions for staff?
Yes, I do. On page 7-51, slide number 9, in which a discussion of de-designation of the shallow zone of the Eastern Indian Wells Valley is discussed, I'd like to know what separates this shallow zone from the larger zone of the Eastern Indian Wells Valley groundwater basin.
Thank you, Mr. Dias. Excellent question. And in fact, that is what we're going to talk about next. And I will mention figure 2, and then we get into figure 3. I would like to answer that question very specifically because that's a key feature to this de-designation.
Okay. I'll wait till you get to that.
Thank you.
Mr. Pumphrey, do you have any questions?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay. And I have no questions. Please proceed, Mr. Booth.
Thank you, Chairperson Cox. So I refer you to figure 2, the 11 by 17, which shows the plan view or the map view of the area for de-designation. You can see the city of Ridgecrest on this map. And as those of you familiar with this area know that the Sierra Nevada Mountains are to the west. As you travel from the Sierra Nevada Mountains to the east, you come upon this map so that the eastern boundary of this valley is the Argus Range that you see on this map. And the groundwater of Indian Wells Valley is separated from the Salt Wells Valley by a series of ridges that are pointed out in the blue line as we technically like to say the squiggly lines. The snowmelt is primarily what recharges the groundwater beneath the Indian Wells Valley. And the water travels typically from the Sierra Nevada Mountains eastward, somewhat northerly in some places, to the China Lake Playa. And at this point, the evaporation process is what essentially pulls the water out of the subsurface into the atmosphere. And it is this evaporation concentration mechanism that has made the total dissolved solids, the TDS, the salt, as well as the arsenic and other inorganic compounds to concentrate in the groundwater. And I just want to point out that when I refer to the squiggly lines, I'm talking about it's the outline of the bedrock. It's the outline of the hills that protrude above the ground surface. And we're not proposing de-designation of those because they're, one, not part of the groundwater basin. And number two, any water that might exist in those hills would be in fractured bedrock, and it would be fresh water because it would typically be from precipitation, would not have undergone this evaporation technique as much, and would therefore likely to be fresh, but it does not produce much water at all. The boundary on the west is a straight line. It follows the China Lake boundary, the facility boundary, I should say. And in fact, all of the area of de-designation is completely within the China Lake facility. And although it seems somewhat arbitrary to have that line drawn there, in fact, there is a geological reason to have the boundary be there because the water west of that line tends to be fresh, and the water east of that line tends to be salty. I would now like to refer you to figure three, the final figure. Excuse me. And point out some details on this excellent block diagram, as we call it. If you orient yourself on the surface, you can see where we have the China Lake Playa itself, the western boundary I spoke of, the squiggly lined boundary of the low hills separating the eastern Indian Wells Valley from the Salt Wells Valley, and you see the city of Ridgecrest. Now I want to orient you to the subsurface. So let's start from the west and go east. On the very western edge of this map, we see the arrow that is labeled recharge from the deep fracture flow. This is the recharge from the Sierra Nevada Mountains, as I described. And you'll see at the very bottom of this diagram, we've got depicted a well screen from a well that is completed in the lower aquifer, which is labeled DHZ, and that stands for Deep Hydrologic Zone. It is what we consider to be a true aquifer. It produces a lot of water. The water is fresh in this lower zone. It is, in fact, the regional aquifer. And you can see that the well screen we're depicting there, typically the well screen, this particular example, we're about, the top of the screen is about 200 feet below the ground surface, and a well like this could be completed as deep as 700 feet. Above the DHZ, we run into a little darker brown that you'll see labeled as IHZ. This stands for Intermediate Hydrologic Zone. This is primarily composed of clay. There are some sand stringers that are depicted there in these sort of worm-like features. But principally, the clay, the Intermediate Hydrologic Zone, acts as a barrier, not a complete barrier, but it certainly retards any groundwater communication from the deeper zone to the upper. And in fact, as you go to the upper, where it is labeled as SHZ, which stands for Shallow Hydrologic Zone, out here in the western part of the Indian Wells Valley, that's dry. There's no water there. Now let's travel further eastward in the subsurface, and we come across a feature with diagonal lines with arrows, those signify the faults that have offset some of the subsurface here. And as you travel east of the faults, you'll see that there starts to be water in the shallow hydrologic zone. Water exists here because it's the low point of the valley. But this water is not in direct communication to the regional aquifer below because the shallow hydrologic zone is separated by the intermediate zone, or this clay. And to answer your question, Mr. Dias, it is specifically only the shallow hydrologic zone of the Eastern Indian Wells Valley that we're recommending for de-designation, along with Salt Wells Valley. But as far as the Eastern Indian Wells Valley, it is only the shallow zone that we're recommending de-designation. The water beneath the intermediate zone is fresh. It's a water supply for the city of Ridgecrest. It's good water, and it will remain in use. And I think the nearest water supply well in that deep aquifer is something like a mile away from the China Lake facility boundary. But again, it's in a deeper zone, so it's the horizontal distance is really not pertinent. It's the fact that it's separated. Okay, continuing our trip through the subsurface, the dark brown with the lines scattered about indicate bedrock. There's the low hills that I pointed out to you in the plan view come to the surface here. Water does flow from the Indian Wells Valley into the Salt Wells Valley to the east. It's hard to read. I apologize for the printout on this, but that wording in the this fractured bedrock depiction says potential fracture flow. Then there are arrows indicating water does flow from west to east, but it's very slow. Not a lot of water travels through this fractured bedrock. And then finally, we get into the Salt Wells Valley groundwater basin. We have a line depicting the water table. The entire groundwater basin below that water table line is saturated. And we're advocating de-designation of that entire groundwater basin because there's only the one aquifer. I don't know if I'd even call it an aquifer, but there's the one water-bearing zone. And that entire groundwater basin water is naturally high in TDS and other inorganics. This concludes my presentation. Of course, I will be glad to answer any questions, but I do want to leave you with the idea that we're requesting the board action B that you adopt the resolution that's in your package that, in fact, de-designates immune beneficial use for the groundwaters that I have outlined. The resolution is on page 7-5.
Mr. Dias, we'll come back to you. Do you have any questions for staff?
Yes. First of all, thank you, Richard, for answering my first question. And now my second question has to do with the purpose of the proposed de-designation. I think you said that such an action would facilitate the Navy's groundwater remediation program. Could you briefly explain how it would do that?
Yes, thank you for that question. The little bit of background, there are several groundwater basins in our region that are high in naturally high in TDS. When the basin plan adopted municipal beneficial use, it adopted that MUN use for all of the groundwater, knowing at the time there were some basins that it just simply did not qualify for, but we didn't think it was appropriate to spend staff resources to try to designate all those without a good reason. We certainly had other things to do. So the only time we've ever considered de-designating immune use is when a interested party would come to us with a request to so de-designate for purposes that they have, and Searles Lake Valley, the groundwater beneath Searles Lake Valley, is the only other place where immune use has been de-designated because the industrial use of that water is such that for their industrial use to have put some of the inorganic constituents in that water, we felt was allowable because the water was naturally high in TDS. Similarly, for the Indian Wells Valley and the Salt Wells Valley, because the Navy has contaminated groundwater beneath the facility at various places, of which there's been many years of investigation And I do have personnel here to answer any specific questions you may have on the Navy's effort. It is their request to de-designate the Mian use, because otherwise the Navy would be required to clean up groundwater to drinking water standards, when in fact the water does not meet drinking water standards. So the attempt here is to acknowledge the Navy's request to de-designate in a basin that we already understand to be naturally high in the TDS and such, with the idea that it would be inconsistent to require cleanup to a standard that really is not even met naturally. Does that help?
Yes, thank you very much. No more questions.
Mr. Sandell, do you have any questions for staff?
No, no questions. All quite clear. Thank you.
Mr. Jardine?
No questions.
Mr. Pumphrey?
No, thank you very much.
I have no questions. At this time, we will turn to the public. Are there any members of the public at the Truckee meeting location who wish to address the board? No. Are there any members of the public in Rosamond?
No, there are not.
Okay. Any members of the public in South Lake Tahoe who wish to address the board or ask questions at this time?
No, Chairwoman Cox, we don't have any questions here.
Is there anyone here at this meeting location that have any questions for staff? Okay. Thank you very much. The matter will return to the board. We are being asked to consider the proposed basin plan amendment to remove the municipal and domestic supply beneficial use designation from certain groundwaters beneath the Naval Air Weapons Station, China Lake, Kern, Inyo, and San Bernardino counties. A motion would be in order.
I would move approval of the resolution as contained in the board packet. I believe there's a late revision, and I'm not sure that that goes to the.
Yes, Member Pumphrey, there is an late addition that staff have placed in here. Rich, can you explain that briefly?
Yes, thank you for pointing that out. I apologize for not mentioning that earlier. The late addition is it consists of two parts. One part is to include figure 2-2, which is simply the same figure you saw on 11x17. It outlines the de-designated area, at least on the surface. That is to be included into the basin plan itself. So this map will go into the basin plan, and the late addition is making that request that that map be put into the basin plan. And the second part is essentially a legal description, a way of defining the boundary. You can imagine that Victorville staff and I and Navy personnel have spent quite a bit of time figuring out the optimum, or what I call the sweet spot. We wanted to de-designate as much area and volume of groundwater that would serve the purpose that we had for facilitating the Navy's work, but not a bit more. We wanted to maintain as much of the water as we felt appropriate with municipal use. So in the course of the many months of this, we wound up with a designation boundary, as you see in figure 2-2. The late edition simply describes it based on the public land survey, the facility boundary, the groundwater basin boundary, so that it gives a very specific outline of where that boundary is.
So my motion would be to approve the resolution as contained in the packet, including the late revision items.
Is there a second?
I think Dawn seconded.
I second.
We have a motion and a second. Madam Clerk?
All right, so Dawn and Peter. Keith Dias?
Aye.
And Eric Sandell?
Aye.
And Kimberly Cox?
Aye.
It carries.
Okay, thank you for that presentation, Mr. Booth.
Thank you.
We will now move on to reports by Water Board Chair and board members. We will start with Mr. Jardine.
No reports from Don.
Mr. Sandell.
Despite the recent rains, we still don't have enough water.
We all concur. Mr. Dias.
Thank you, but I have no report.
Mr. Pumphrey.
No report. Thank you.
And the chair has a brief report I wanted to share with the board and members of the public. I met recently with Athens Services. They operate the American Organics Composting Facility in Victorville, and they are looking for support to expand that facility. I was also able to attend the Grazing Regulatory Action Project stakeholder meeting in Bishop on the 28th, which was very well attended, and I appreciated the enthusiasm and the participation by the cattlemen who were there sharing with us in a very free and open dialogue some of their concerns about the GRAP, including they weren't real crazy about the name. And I also participated in the chair's conference call. One of the items we discussed was the upcoming chair's program meeting, which is being scheduled for April the 20th. And that concludes the chair's report. Now we'll move on to item 9, which is the executive officer's report. Ms. Kumyanjin.
Good afternoon, board members. I'm Patty Kuyumjun, your executive officer, and I'd like to give you a few updates and information of things that are going on. Our next board meeting will be March 11th and 12th in South Lake Tahoe, but I did want to remind everyone that we have canceled our April meeting that was slated in Barstow. I also have a late addition to your packet, and that is an update on the most recent budget for the State Water Resources Control Board that the governor released on January 10th. I'll speak a bit further on the content of that a little bit later in my presentation. But regarding updates, I want to give you a slight update on item number 2, which is the bacteria recreation standard and bait stamp 9-9. I sent a letter on behalf of our organization at the request of the board to the State Water Board explaining some of our most recent data on our bacteria testing. I also made a request that they hold a workshop in the Tahoe area, perhaps co-joined with our March board meeting. I still don't have an answer yet from them if they would like to do so. I don't think that the March date will work for them, but we still are working with them and collaborating with the State Board staff to try to work out this issue with the bacteria standard so it does not weaken our 40-year-old standard in Lahontan Regional Board. I'm going to shift now to item number 3 in my EO report, and that is regarding the 2012 integrated report. This is on bait stamp page 9-11. As the board recalls, we listed a number of water bodies and sent that to the State Water Board for consideration. And we also sent up 9 areas that we suggest that not be listed. The Water Board looked at those further, and we've been having dialogue with them, and it appears that maybe 5 of those do merit listing. So these are 5 that the board previously had thought shouldn't be listed. After further investigation, looking at the data, it appears are probably appropriate for listing. 4, however, we still feel strongly should not be listed. That's at Hidden Valley Creek for phosphorus, Tahoe Keys for pH, and West Walker River for boron and chloride. And conversations with the State Board seem to indicate that they concur with us in that conclusion. And part of the reason for not listing that is because the data doesn't show merit of listing, and also because they were collected during the drought at low flow, so the numbers were skewed, and so that's not a good reason to list these. So those are a couple updates. The other update is on item number 4, and this is bait stamps 9-12, and this is our annual report we do on how much fuels reduction we did with the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit, and it was a very successful season. This is the first season under our new waiver that the board recently adopted this past year. So 1,200 acres were treated around the Tahoe Basin, which is quite a healthy amount of acres being treated. And in this drought with fire threats so high, it's really important that these these fuel reduction efforts continue. As you recall, we did have a fire in the Tahoe Basin that came scarily close to a lot of homes. We also treated 279 acres of slash piles, and since we're on the subject of fires, the most recent unfortunate fire near Bishop, that 40 houses were affected. I know staff just even this afternoon were conversing with the county to help them deal with their debris management from those homes to see how we could help them with the cleanup and getting some of that debris to landfill. So that work is ongoing with the county and the community, and Patrice Copeland is leading that effort for our region. So, and on other, now I'm going to shift out of what we have in the written EO report to new information. And Kimberly did touch on the GRAP session in Bishop, and I appreciate both board members Cox and Pumphrey attending that session. I think about 80 people attended, which is a pretty healthy number. We had GRAP sessions in San Luis Obispo and Redding, and we probably had closer to 250, 300 at those. Jonathan Bisham from the State Water Board, Deputy Director, attended with myself, and I think we had a good dialogue. And as Gomer Cox said, it was rather lively and open dialogue where people did want to share their viewpoints. And what came out of the effort was that we did make commitments to prepare some more information on what exactly were the water quality problems caused by grazing, where were they, so we could have a continued dialogue with the ranchers. What are some of the tools the regional boards use today? There are a number of regional boards that regulate grazing in the regions, and what tools do they use and how do they work? So that's the second work product we promised the ranchers. The third is the complexity of 303D listing process, and so we promised to put together some documents better explaining how that process works, how things get listed and how they get delisted. They also asked, more than a dozen times to change the name, and we said certainly we could do that, but they would like individual focused meetings. The next step now is that we'll be meeting with the state board members, because this is a state board policy, and get direction on what are the next steps, which will likely be a science data call and some sort of a seminar on the science, and likely more focused meetings with stakeholders and associations. So the other item I wanted to update, again, board member Pumphrey accompanied on this effort along with Mike Plasiak and others from the Victorville office, Patrice Copeland and Jan Zimmerman. But we had a good sit down, I will say, with LADWP. We've been working with them to collaborate with them, to try to improve their level of compliance, to get the proper permits. And so I know that the Victorville office spent the day with them, going out to site visits to better explain the laws, the requirements, answer their questions. I really think it was a very good back and forth and an open dialogue that I'm very heartened to see after many, many years, to see this level of cooperation. It's really very good. We also talked about headwaters protection, how we have mutual interest in that. They committed to working more closely with the Inyo Mono Irwin on wetlands restoration projects and providing technical assistance and helping them with their salt nutrient management plan. So that's a great thing as well. We also are sampling in Bishop Creek along with them and others. And in April, we'll get together and share the data and then probably do some public outreach, because at the moment there's signs up in Bishop Creek for people not to recreate in the water because it's unsafe because of the high bacteria numbers. But we have new data, and so we owe the public communication of what we have found and what happens next. We did something like that last year before the recreational period started. It's a heavily used creek by the local community there. And staff training. We have done something similar with the U.S. Forest Service. We committed to working with them to do a joint employee training effort to teach them about CEQA, about our laws, and answer their questions about how our projects work. So I think it was a really good session. And we were committed to meeting quarterly now, and to continue this dialogue. So it was a very good effort, I think. I'm going to shift on to money now. about the budget. So in your packet, you'll see an excerpt that is prepared about what's in the State Board budget. But let me give you a few highlights. It's a pretty big budget there. $1.4 billion for the State and Region Boards today, over 2,000 positions. The governor's January 10 budget, which is something he proposes for consideration by the legislature, proposes an 8% increase and roughly 142 new positions at the State Board and Regional Boards. 10 of those slots would be going for more flow in-stream flow requirements statewide and water rights. That may or may not involve our region at some point because they're setting standards on how to do inflow stream requirements. An increase of $44.5 million in bond expenditures to new projects. What they've done is they've swept the leftover money in old bonds and moved it to new purposes, most of it going to the drinking water program. Another 21 positions for the new underground storage tank law, which also has a new provision that allows groundwater cleanup for constituents that are not petroleum. So dry cleaners, solvents, others, orphan sites could qualify for this funding. So they're going to be working with the regional boards on how to make that program work. An increase of 55 positions for the water bond. There is a healthy amount of the water bond out there that they're going to be divvying out over the next couple of years. And so 55 new slots to help push that money out the door. And there's quite a bit of money there. An increase of 11 positions and $1.5 million from the general fund for the continuation of the marijuana program. As the board heard in our previous board meeting, you got a presentation about the statewide efforts and regional efforts on regulating marijuana grows, medical marijuana grows in California, as well as illegal trespass grows. This will enable a pilot project in the North Coast region and the Central Coast region to continue with permitting as well as enforcement and inspections of those, including illegal grows. And our region continues to do its work. We have predominantly illegal drug cartel grows in our region to try to identify those to see if we can get funding to clean up some of the abate the problems of that. Another 42.5 positions, all for the drought. This is both in the water rights unit and other places. Some of that may go to the regional boards for doing inspections. Some of the regional boards have been assisting the water rights unit in doing inspections on water rights. So that's a rather healthy budget there. So I just wanted to share that with you. My last part of my EO report was going to switch to a discussion of our disadvantaged community report, Bait Stamp 9-34. As the board will recall, in this past June, we went to Bishop and we participated with the Inyo Mono Urimp on a disadvantaged community I think it was a symposium they called it, or on disadvantaged community issues in the area. And we had our own board presentation on it. This came out of a WQCC, or a state board directive to all the regional boards to spend some time exploring not just disadvantaged community concerns, but also climate change, and then to come up with recommendations or suggestions for the state board and what to do in those areas. This report is the first report of that effort to at least report back to the board on what happened in Bishop, what we learned, what people said, and some recommendations and guidance on this. Our climate change report will come forward at a later date in the later spring to the board as well. So this is actually the first of our attempts when we try to look at policy issues and report back to the board in what form the board would want to consider something like this. Would they like to think about the report and have a later discussion? Would they like to be informed? Similar to the bacteria letter, would the board like the executive officer to transmit some of this information to the state board and others to share our knowledge? It's really so. This is the first one. This one, as I will say, is a bit more simpler and straightforward than probably the climate change report. They'll have a whole range of ideas and recommendations. I think the climate change report sort of lends itself to perhaps putting a draft out for public comment and having perhaps a workshop devoted to the recommendations. But I didn't know if the board wished the same on this. And if you would like me to, I could just give a brief summary of some of the key points on this.
Yes, please go ahead.
Some of the key points of what we learned about disadvantaged communities in our region is that we are unique. We have predominantly rural disadvantaged communities. They're smaller. And many of the environmental justice laws and programs that have been written to date are mostly with the emphasis on urban areas, these communities next to oil refineries that have hazardous waste and cumulative impacts. In our region, because it's rural and remote, you know, we have 10 tribes and over 50 disadvantaged communities. Some of our region is in urban areas in the Victorville, Barstow area, where it does meet some of the metrics of some of the existing laws on the urban areas, but the bulk of our land mass is in rural remote areas where a lot of the existing programs just don't match. So what have we learned? We learned that the definition for disadvantaged community that's presently in statute for many programs doesn't really fit or benefit rural areas, and it probably merits being revisited. That was a kind of a big takeaway. The other one, there's insufficient funding to even identify these poor disadvantaged communities because they can't even afford to do the surveys to qualify themselves to be disadvantaged in the first place. They have a lot more private water systems or disconnected water systems with fewer than 15 connections. And a lot of the existing programs start regulating or protecting public health from 15 connections and above, but not 15 connections and below. So that's really a limit in how the EJ policy is today. And the capacity of rural communities are dispersed. You could have a family, five families in one area, and other areas you could have three houses that are disadvantaged next to two houses that are not. So they never quite add up to count as a, quote, disadvantaged community, therefore never qualify for the technical assistance and never qualify for the help and funding that other communities get in urban core areas. And there's cumulative impacts. So we see a lot more naturally occurring pollutants, and we don't, in our rural areas, qualify because there aren't a lot of air pollution problems, mostly just water quality problems. So that sets them out. So what are some of the key recommendations that we are suggesting? One is that we identify, you know, a liaison within our own region, a staff person that perhaps focus in this area, perhaps get some training as a facilitator and help do some outreach with these communities and help them. We also thought we could do additional training on environmental justice for our employees on how to work with the communities. There are a lot of tools in the toolbox, and actually the State Water Board is already planning that for not just our region, but all the other regions to do some training. We would love to get some financial assistance to have a staff person devoted to doing these sort of activities on our region, so that's on our wish list. Another recommendation would be considering that we add subsistence fishing and tribal cultural beneficial use to the basin plan. The North Coast region has something like that already in their basin plan, and the state board is exploring that as something for a statewide policy, but the region could on its own proceed with it if they chose to. Some of the things we do already that we'd like to continue is, of course, continue to hold our board meetings in the areas most affected, support the IRWIN programs, continue to move SEP money in the area to help DACs, continue our community technical assistance and education, focused meetings, and continue our efforts with written materials in Spanish and providing translation. I think these are things we've been doing over the years that have been successful, and we need to continue. I won't go into all the details of the recommendations to the State Board and OEHA and the other agencies, but they sort of are in that theme of what I told you in the areas of either the definitions that don't work and in areas of how we could fix them. That's just a quick summary of what's the guts of this report. And, you know, even there's an innovative idea I will give Lori Kemper for this is, you know, like the Energy Commission, they give rebates for energy efficiency for appliances and other things. But in the water world, you know, could we consider grants or rebates individuals to install RO systems for treating water in remote areas? Could that be an innovative way to help some of these communities? So I hand it back to the chair and the board if they'd like to give any guidance to me or further discussion.
Thank you, Ms. Kumyunjin. I think I heard one of your thoughts expressed there is a question as to whether or not the board feels comfortable sending this on to the state board, and I would certainly support that. This I believe is one of the simpler documents that we would produce on this subject. It seems very straightforward, and I would suggest doing so. We'll move to Mr. Jardine. Do you have any questions or comments for the executive officer?
Just one brief comment. I know there are certain areas within Alpine County that Washoe tribal members still get their water from irrigation ditches, and that's drinking water. So I look on this as an opportunity to work with the Lahontan Board to, and with Washoe Tribe to correct this. That's it.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Sandell?
I don't have any real comment. I'm interested to that we pursue this and be as helpful as we can, and I'd like to continue to hear reports on how we're doing.
Mr. Dias?
I concur with Mr. Sandell. I'd like to be kept up to date as we progress.
Mr. Pumphrey?
Well, I thought this was, although it's not lengthy, I thought this was an excellent report. It was one of those kind of reports where you make notes in the margin and then you find your note in the margin was spoken to three sentences later. So I thought even though it's not huge in size, it's significant in content and was very well done. This is obviously a classic set of problems that's only going to be approachable on a partnership basis between the Lahontan and a myriad of other people. And I'm really glad that the report recognizes that we have to seek and support the participation of other agencies, local and at the local and state levels, to get involved in trying to find solutions to these problems. So I hope we can be a lead in that, and I hope we can lend support in a variety of ways and resources to other agencies that would be willing and able to work with us in this.
Do you have any questions based upon the board's comments, Ms. Kumyunjin?
No, I just thank the board for their support and on this because some of the ideas came from the board members themselves too, so I really appreciate your support. And I will then transmit this with a letter to the state board and probably to other agencies and then follow up with conversations with them and report back to the board on a regular basis on how we're proceeding with this implementation. And hopefully I'll have good news to report back to the board. That is my hope. Thank you for all your support and the staff and the stakeholders to help prepare this.
Thank you. We will now move on to item 10, which is a closed session. Ms. Neimeyer, do we have a closed session tonight?
We do not.
Okay. And that brings us to adjournment. Right? Yes. Thank you all for your patience in participating with us on the phone and here in person. It's a little bit cumbersome, but I think everyone had the opportunity to say what they needed to say. So thank you all. We stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you.